Satam prasangam mama virgyap samvita bhavanti hritkarna rasayana katha tajjoshanad asvapaparga vartmani sradharatir bhaktir anukramishyati. In the association of pure devotees, discussion of the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very pleasing and satisfying to the ear and the heart. By cultivating such knowledge, one gradually becomes advanced on the path of liberation, and therefore he is freed and his attraction becomes fixed. Then real devotion and devotional service begin. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The process of advancing in Krishna consciousness and devotional service is described here. The first point is that one must seek the association of persons who are Krishna conscious and who engage in devotional service. Without such association, one cannot make advancement. Simply by theoretical knowledge or study, one cannot make any appreciable advancement. One must give up the association of materialistic persons and seek the association of devotees, because without the association of devotees, one cannot understand the activities of the Lord. Generally, people are convinced of the impersonal feature of the Absolute because they do not associate with devotees. They cannot understand that the Absolute Truth can be a person and have personal activities. This is a very difficult subject matter, and unless one has personal understanding of the Absolute Truth, there is no meaning to devotion. Service or devotion cannot be offered to anything impersonal. Service must be offered to a person. Non-devotees cannot appreciate Krishna consciousness by reading the Srimad Bhagavatam or any other Vedic literature wherein the activities of the Lord are described. They think that these activities are fictional, manufactured stories, because spiritual life is not explained to them in a proper mood. To understand the personal activities of the Lord, one has to seek the association of devotees. And by such association, when one contemplates and tries to understand the transcendental activities of the Lord, the path to liberation is open and he is freed. One who has firm faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes fixed, and his attraction for association with the Lord and the devotees increases. Association with devotees means association with the Lord. The Lord who makes this association develops the consciousness for rendering service to the Lord. And then, being situated in the transcendental position of devotional service, he gradually becomes perfect. Today's verse has once again been selected by Vishakha Prabhu. This chapter from the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam is entitled The Glories of Devotional Service. Lord Kapila Dev is stressing to Devahuti, his mother, and to all living beings the great necessity of discussing the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the association of devotees. In Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, it is described that the Lord appears in four ways. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Tulsi Devi, River Ganga, and the devotees who surrender their lives to Him. The Lord is always manifested in these four principles. The deity requires chanting a mantra, proper installation and welcoming before the Lord reciprocates in that form. But in Tulsi, Ganga, Srimad Bhagavatam, and the heart of the sincere surrender devotee, there's no need for any installation. The Lord is always manifesting Himself in these forms. Srila Prabhupada explains that in the association of materialistic people, so many subject matters are discussed. So vidvaraho strakaraya samstuta purushapashu yatkarana pate poto peto jatu nama katagraja. That men who are like dogs, hogs, camels, and asses praise other men who are not attracted to glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And what we associate with, we become. This is not just a philosophical principle, but it is the law of nature. Prabhupada used the example, if you put iron rod in fire, it becomes red and hot like fire. And if you think it's still just an iron rod, then touch it and see. The same effect will happen as if you touch fire directly. Similarly, if you put that iron rod in ice, it will become as cold as ice. So what we associate with, who we associate with, is what our consciousness becomes. Association of devotees does not mean simply associating with people who have a particular hairstyle or wear beads around their necks or have particular names. Association of devotees means in that association we perform those activities that are pleasing to the Lord. Especially hearing and chanting His divine glories. Srila Prabhupada explains prajalpa, or mundane talk, gossip, that is not pleasing to the Lord, that does not have a relationship to the Lord. It is so very dangerous that literally that prajalpa, Prabhupada explains, when it is spoken through our mouth, it's literally draining our spiritual force. Draining whatever spiritual energy we have accumulated. Yatretyanti katha mrishtas trishna yoprashamojata nirvairam yatrabhuteshu nodbego yatrakashtana. The Bhagavatam describes what is the effect of devotees who come together with a sincere attitude of pleasing the Lord to discuss His glories. This verse from fourth canto explains how when my devotees come together to chant my glories and discuss my activities, then they become free of envy for one another for the time being. As long as that discussion is there, they are free from envy toward one another, and they're free from the pangs of material existence. Because chanting the glories and the pastimes and the teachings of the Lord is so pleasing to the Lord. It actually creates deep, profound relationships of love. Because Krishna is in the center. Krishna is the ultimate object of all love. When pleasing Him, when hearing and chanting His glories, is the center of any relationships, it actually creates love between those living beings, if it is done properly. So Srimad Bhagavatam is so very, very important, the crest jewel of all Vedic literatures, because from the beginning to the end, it is Harikatha, wonderful glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But as the Acharyas explain, to actually get the proper effect of hearing and chanting Srimad Bhagavatam, we must follow in the footsteps of the speaker, Shukadev Goswami, who heard the Bhagavatam from his guru, Veda Vyas, and here following in the footsteps of Parikshit Maharaj. Parikshit Maharaj was not listening to Srimad Bhagavatam as a spiritual form of entertainment. He was desperate. There was an urgent need. He was going to die in 7 days. He gave up his food, he gave up his home, he gave up his family, he gave up his sleep, he gave up everything in the world so that he could 100% put his entire consciousness in taking shelter of the words of Srimad Bhagavatam. Gita tells, Yegatamam prabhajyante tam stathai vabhajamyaham. As we approach the Lord reciprocates accordingly. Similarly, as we approach the holy name, as we approach the Srimad Bhagavatam, as we approach the deity, as we approach the Vaishnavas, Krishna will reciprocate with us accordingly. There may be so many people in a class, but everyone is benefiting according to the sincerity, the submissiveness, and the intensity in which they are taking shelter of the message. Therefore, it is so very, very important to learn to cultivate developing proper relationships amongst devotees in hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, following in the footsteps of the great sages. Kirata hunandra pulinda pokasha abhira sumbaya vanakasha daya ye ye cha papaya yadapashrayashraya sujyanti tasmai prabhavishnave namaha. Prabhupada, I'd like to quote this verse, that even if one is born in the lowest, degradest families or societies, if one takes shelter of those devotees who find pleasure in hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, one will attain the ultimate perfection of life. There's a sloka in Bhagavatam that if one takes shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, may or may not be delivered. But if one takes shelter of a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then absolutely without doubt that person will be delivered. Because the Lord manifests himself most accessible within this world through the devotees. When Srila Prabhupada came to the Western world, he had complete faith in this verse, Kirata Hunandra Pulinta Pukasha. Our races aren't even mentioned there. These are more elevated, degraded races, but it doesn't say so much about Americans and Canadians. The Prabhupada had this faith. Others were skeptical or even critical that sannyasis should not cross the ocean because they will fall. That the modes of passion and ignorance are too powerful, and the people in those places are hopeless. But Srila Prabhupada had this faith, this hope, that if he's representing his spiritual master and people take shelter, then they will be delivered. They will attain the ultimate perfection of life. And last night, we heard such a wonderful narration from Shamsundar, Malati, Yamuna, Janaki, Prabhus, of how Prabhupada had such faith in that verse. Kirata hunandra pulinda pukasha abhira sumbaya vanakasha daya yenye cha papaya da pashraya shraya sudyanti tasmoy prabhavishna venamaha. Even the lowest people, if they simply take shelter of a devotee, they will attain all perfection by the mercy of the Lord. And how Prabhupada somehow or other gave people that shelter. Wasn't it a wonderful discussion last night? So many stories we have never heard. And so many stories, no matter how many times we hear them, we relish with such gratitude, because they reveal how the infinite causeless mercy of the Lord is manifesting through his devotee. And if we study Prabhupada's prayer, Sanjala Dutta, we understand really what is his mission in essence. I remember a few years ago I was in Radhadesh, where Jai Bhadra Devi Prabhu was from, and we sang this prayer of Srila Prabhupada. And there was a very elderly man who was actually from a Gaudiya Math. Very, very nice man. And he heard this prayer. And at the end of the prayer, he was crying. He was practically, everyone was sitting down. And he was practically dancing, listening to this prayer as it was sung, because he understood the Bengali language. And afterward, he said that the entire Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta in its essence is contained in these prayers. He was crying. He was taking notes and writing down each sloka as it was being sung. Srila Prabhupada is revealing what is a Vaishnava. What is the process of receiving the causeless mercy of Guru and Krishna? By studying the two prayers that Prabhupada composed on Jaladuta, we could really, really understand what is the path of perfection and how to achieve it. Prabhupada is not writing that I am a Paramhamsa Vaishnav and I will go to the Western world and conquer all opposition. Prabhupada's calling himself the most unfortunate, insignificant beggar. Prabhupada is appealing, I have no power to convince these people. How will they understand my words? How will they possibly understand your message, Krishna? My spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, has ordered me. He has ordered me to go to the Western world to speak your message, Krishna. But I have no power or capacity to do so. Only if you make my words suitable to them will they be able to understand it. Only if you empower my speech will it actually take root within their hearts. These people are completely immersed in the modes of passion and ignorance. He's begging, he's praying for Krishna to help give him the words that will transform our hearts. Now, Srila Prabhupada was a great scholar. He knew the Bhagavatam, he knew the Gita, he knew the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he knew the Upanishads, he knew all the Vaishnava Bhakti Shastras, the Goswami's literatures. There is no problem for Prabhupada to recite profusely and eloquently wherever he was. And he was praying to Krishna with such humility that unless you empower my words with your mercy, they will not understand. Yes, this was the foundation of Prabhupada's mission, his prayers to Krishna and his guru on the Jaladuta. And then he reveals that Krishna, let me just be your puppet. You be the puppeteer and I am your puppet, wooden puppet. And with the strings of your mercy, make me dance, O Lord, make me dance as you like. I have no devotion and I have no knowledge. But you, Krishna, have given me the name Bhaktivedanta. Now it is up to you to fulfill the purport of my name. An insignificant beggar, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. So Prabhupada came to the West in the spirit of the great acharyas, not thinking I am someone great, but considering oneself just the humble instrument of Guru and the Parampara. That is the supreme greatness. Srila Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, such an acharya. Raghunath Das Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Lokanath Goswami, Bhugarva Goswami, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, of everyone in Vrindavan, they encouraged him to write the life and teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When people like that are entrusting so much faith in you, you have to be great. Yes? They knew the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita will be the authoritative biography and teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for the rest of time. And they have all given the order to Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami to do it. And what was his qualification? Very humbly and submissively on the banks of Sri Radha Kund, he just heard the teachings of Raghunath Das Goswami for at least 3 hours every single day. And Raghunath Das Goswami was so humble. He came to Vrindavan with the idea of jumping from Govardhan Hill and ending his life. Because Swarup Damodar Goswami had left, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had left. And Raghunath Das Goswami, although he was the assistant of the personal secretary of Lord Chaitanya, Swarup Damodar Goswami, Raghunath was so humble. He was right this far from the Lord practically at all time. He practically never spoke to him. He didn't feel himself qualified. Whatever Raghunath Das Goswami wanted to speak to the Lord, he would speak through Swarup Damodar Goswami. He was not feeling that I can approach the Lord directly. He was really in the spirit of being the very, very humble servant of the servant. He was so humble. You know the various stages of his renunciation. First he left his multi-million dollar estate and went to Puri to live as a mendicant. Then he was just sitting on the Singhadwaram begging for some food. And he considered that was hypocritical, because he's thinking in terms of, will this person give me? He gave me yesterday. He was evaluating people according to what they may give or not give him. So he didn't like that mentality. So then he just started going to the free booths where you just stand in line and get a little rice. But then even that was too, he considered, he didn't deserve that. So Lord Chaitanya said, where is he eating? And what he did is, from the free food booths, after they served everything out, if there was some leftovers, after a few days, it would get rotten. So they would just throw it in a rubbish pile, kind of like an organic compost pile, near one of the gates of the Jagannath Temple, to feed the cows. And the cows would eat the rice. And some of the grains of the rice that were so rotten, the cows spit it out. At night, that was all that was left in the pile. And Raghunath Das Goswami, he didn't put a spotlight on himself and say, this is what I am eating. See my renunciation. Nobody in the entire world knew. He would go at night when everyone was sleeping and collect those grains of the spit out rice by the cows. And you can't eat it. So he would just take the inner portion of it and wash it and eat that. Haribo. The Lord Chaitanya is in everyone's heart. He came to Raghunath Das's house and said, Raghunath, I heard that you are eating wonderful feast every day. He said, no, my lord, I'm not. But he came just when Raghunath was eating it. He hid it. So Lord Chaitanya just snatched it and ate a morsel. And Swarup Damodar Goswami said, that's enough, my lord, enough, enough. Mahaprabhu Bhakta Gyanair Vairagya Pradhan. That Lord Chaitanya is very, very happy to see the renunciation of his devotees. And that renunciation is not based on an egoistic principle. It's based on such humility. That was Raghunath Das. But he went even beyond that. When he was in Vrindavan, he would just take a pound full of buttermilk every day or two. That was all he ate. But was he thinking, look at everyone else, they're eating rotis and sabjis and dal, sense gratifications, I'm just buttermilk man. Not like that. Sometimes when you fast in the improper state of mind, your ego is having a feast if you think you're better than someone else. But Raghunath Das, he would just secretly eat his little pat of buttermilk and would cry. And what was his crying? He was thinking, I'm such a sinful sense gratifier that I'm wasting all this time eating this buttermilk when I could be serving Krishna. I'm taking all this time away from Krishna because of my fallen state. Hare Krishna. It's hard to imagine, but this was the reality of how he was feeling. So yes, he went to Vrindavan thinking he was completely hopeless and alone in this world without his two lords and masters. And Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, he went to get their blessings very humbly. And they said, no, we're not giving you our blessings. You stay with us because you're the only person who knows the final pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You have the notes of Swarup Damodar Goswami. You eyewitness seeing the Lord's pastimes. Every day speak Lord Gauranga's leelas to us. So it was on their order that he sat at Sri Radhakund. They gave him a place at Radhakund. And Krishna Das Kaviraj was hearing from him each day. It's very wonderful to see these great Vaishnavas never considered themselves qualified. They were all given orders. Even Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He didn't preach until his guru, Ishwarapuri, told him, after initiation, now go out and spread the holy name of Krishna all over. Harinam, harinam, harinam eva kevalam kalo nasteva, nasteva, nasteva gatiranyata. In this age of Kali, there is no other way than the holy name of Krishna. Now go out and promote this Harinam Sankirtan. And Nityananda Prabhu traveled for 20 years and never preached to anyone until Lord Chaitanya told him and Haridas, go door to door, village to village, bathing ghat to bathing ghat, and tell everyone to chant the holy names. Worship Krishna. Hear about Krishna. Chant the names of Krishna. Krishna is your mother. Krishna is your father. Krishna is your real wealth. Krishna is your very life and soul. Chant his holy names. So Raghunath Das Goswami spoke Chaitanya Charitamrita on the order of Rupa and Sanatana. And Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami listened. And then he was given the order by Jiva Goswami, Gopal Bhatt Goswami, and others. Now you write it. Such a glorious message. And Kaviraj Goswami reveals his heart. He says, I'm not writing this. I'm somehow or other, by the mercy of the Vaishnavas, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is manifesting himself on these pages. I'm practically blind. I'm an invalid, rheumatism. I'm suffering from boils due to envy. In various places, he explains his physical condition. But it is a great wonder that these words are coming out from my hand. It is not me. Kaviraj Goswami tells, he reveals his heart innocently and confidentially. that I'm lower than the worms in stool. Now, how many of us can honestly say that? I'm lower than the worms in stool. I'm more sinful than Jagai and Madhai. If anyone hears my name, they lose all their piety. And if anyone speaks my name, they become sinful. Now, Srila Prabhupada explains that he wasn't just saying this to get a reputation of being humble. He was revealing his heart completely honestly. I'm in a diseased condition. I'm suffering from boils due to envy. In this state, I am taking shelter and falling at the feet of the Supreme Physician, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Rupa Raghunatha, in each chapter, every chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita, he is falling at the feet of Rupa Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami, begging for their mercy. And in one beautiful chapter, he offers his worshipable obeisances to all the Vaishnavas. And he tells the categories of Vaishnavas that he's surrendering his heart to with obeisance. The Paramhamsas, the advanced devotees, and even the new devotees who are just coming. And he offers his obeisances and worshippers all the readers of Chaitanya Charitamrita and begs forgiveness for his inadequacies. This is Vaishnava. If we actually want to understand what is Krishna, what is Krishna's teachings, what is Krishna's lila, we have to have this state of consciousness. We have to have this humility. Because only with that humility can we actually take shelter. Raghunath Das Goswami is Prayojana Acharya. He's the example of the highest realizations of the spiritual world. But as Prayojana Acharya, he's teaching by his example. We have to follow in his footsteps. And we have to actually cultivate the type of humility that Kaviraj Goswami, his disciple, and Raghunath Das Goswami have actually imbibed. No pride, no arrogance. Utter humility. And this was Srila Prabhupada's qualification. And that was revealed in his prayers on Jaladutta. Totally in the footsteps of our previous acharyas is those prayers. And even when he would have his devotees read Krishna book to him, and he would say, I have not written this. Krishna has written. Prabhupada would just listen, not thinking this is my writing, just somehow by Krishna's and Guru's infinite, inconceivable mercy, it came through me. That is greatness. So yes, Srila Prabhupada had absolute faith. He was ordered by his Guru. And because he was ordered by his Guru, he understood all the potency and capacity to fulfill the mission was in that order. If he just completely took shelter. And therefore, Prabhupada had such faith. We heard from Janaki Devi yesterday how there were people in the Bowery who actually threatened Prabhupada with weapons. He was kicked out of his house. He went to Janaki and Mukunda Maharaj and asked, you know, can I stay with you? I have nowhere to go. Can you imagine? Prabhupada, such a Paramhamsa Acharya, who had those wonderful little rooms in Radha Damodar Temple, surrounded in Seva Kunj by Vaishnavas and Jiva Goswami's deity and this Pushpa Samadhi of his Gurudev. Here he is. He was homeless. Actually begging people who were in the roles of Malechas and Yavanas, you know, for a floor to sleep on. But he still had his return ticket on Jaladuta. He could have left. Why didn't he just go there? Go to the docks in New York Harbor and get on the Jaladuta and go back. Because he had such complete faith that this message, when heard from a devotee of the Lord, can award all perfections upon others. And for us to actually understand, not theoretically understand, but to actually understand. What do you want? What are you, nice dancing? What are you? To actually understand, we have to follow in these footsteps. We cannot imitate, but we must follow in these footsteps. There is a beautiful story in Lord Chaitanya's Leela that depicts the importance of taking shelter of a devotee in order to, and not only taking shelter, but in a spirit of actual humble service to understand the message of the Lord. Do we have time to tell?
Yes.
Thank you, thank you. There was a man who was very learned, one of the greatest scholars of the day. He was very simple, had practically no possessions. He was absolutely moral and ethical to all living beings. He was totally renounced. He followed strict vows of celibacy. And he was one of the most famous reciters of Srimad Bhagavatam. His name was Devananda Pandit. One day, now so many scholars and other students were coming to hear him speak Bhagavatam. He was considered the authority of Navadvipa. One day Lord Chaitanya was walking toward Visharada Maheshwar's house. And close by was the academy of Devananda Pandit. He was speaking from the Bhagavatam. And Lord Chaitanya knows everyone's heart. He doesn't hear with his ears like we do. He hears with his ears, but from within the heart. So when he heard Devananda Pandit speaking Bhagavatam, Lord Chaitanya became angry as fire. He started screaming out, "You rascal, you nonsense, you have no right to speak the Bhagavatam. You have not understood the essence of devotion." And then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, with devotees, when he was describing like this, You are speaking so many subjects of Bhagavatam, but you do not understand that every single word, every single syllable is simply glorifying devotional service. Therefore, you are misleading people. You are a nonsense. I cannot tolerate it anymore. I will run into your house and I will rip your Bhagavatam to shreds. And then the Lord started running. And the devotee surrounded the Lord and somehow or other pacified him. Hare Krishna. Now it is explained that one time... Actually, I'll carry on the story. That took place. And on another day, Lord Chaitanya was walking with Srivas Pandit to the outskirts of Navadvip. And they happened to pass by a house of drunkards. And everyone in that house was drinking alcoholic beverages. Now, what do you think Lord Chaitanya did? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu smelled the stench of that alcohol. And he immediately remembered Varuni, the intoxicating beverage that Balaram drinks. And immediately Lord Chaitanya entered into the mood of Balaram and started crying out, Varuni, Varuni! And then he told Srivas, I will go inside! I will go inside! Let us see who will stop me. And Srivas Pandit was trying to stop him. He said, no, my lord, you cannot go inside. Lord Chaitanya said, do you think I am subjected to all these regulative principles and rules and regulations? I will go inside! Varuni, Varuni! Srivas Pandit fell at the Lord's lotus feet and started crying. He said, my lord, you are the supreme father and mother and supporter of the entire universe. You maintain all religious principles. If you go inside and people do not understand your mood, then how will religious principles ever survive in this world? You are the supreme example. If you go in that house, then I will tie a pot with rope around my neck and drown myself in the Ganges today. He took a vow to do that. Lord Chaitanya always honors the vows of his devotees. He said, all right, Srivas, I will not go inside. I will honor your words and I will not go inside. And then he came out of his Balaram bhav. And they started walking. But just the fact that the Lord desired their deliverance, something happened in the hearts of all those drunkards. One of them just happened to look out the window and say, Nimai, there's Nimai. And then some of the others came, and one of them said, Nimai, you're a very good person. You're a very respectable Brahmin. And we especially like the way you sing and dance. And then this drunkard started kind of clapping his hand like, Hari, 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 Hari. And all the other drunkards came by, Hari, 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 Nimai, Nimai, Hari, 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 Bo. Pretty soon the whole house of drunkards was dancing in ecstasy, chanting the holy names of Lord Hari and Hari Bol. Lord Chaitanya was very happy to see. And Srivas Pandit wept tears. Such is the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Somehow or other, by the Lord's will, he just showed favor to them. And they just, in a very innocent way, in their drunken state, they were favorable to him. They said something nice about him. And therefore the Lord gave them the ultimate perfection of life. And they were low-class drunkards. Now, drunkard in America is a normal thing. The drunkard in Navadvip was a really degraded situation. Because they were not envious. They were fallen, but basically innocent. The Lord just gave them complete mercy. So they walked on. And as they walked on the road, by Krishna's grace, by Lord Chaitanya's grace, Devananda Pandit happened to be coming along the road. And the Lord stopped him and said, "You are a hypocrite, you are a rascal, you are a fool. You have no right to speak from Srimad Bhagavatam. You are condemned for doing so. You offended Srivast Thakur." The story behind this is one time when he was giving the Bhagavatam class, Srivast Thakur just happened to be walking down the road and he heard Bhagavatam. And he became so attracted. He just wanted to hear the nectar of the Bhagavatam. Nigamakalpataragalitam palam sukumukadamritadravyasamyutam. Pipata Bhagavatam rasamalayam. That the Bhagavatam is the ripened fruit of all the Vedic literatures. And Sukadev Goswami, when it comes from his mouth, the mouth of such pure devotion, it even becomes sweeter and more nectarine. So Srivast Thakur was sitting there, and as he was hearing the pastimes of the Lord, sometimes he would moan like, but not like that. I'm sorry, I should not imitate. He was moaning. I don't know what it sounded, but he was in ecstasy. In ecstasy. He was crying. And the agnostic, scholarly students of Devananda Pandit, who were taking their notes and studying the philosophy of the Bhagavatam and analytically trying to understand what these slokas and these pastimes really mean, the internal significance. For them, this Srivast was a disturbance. He just seemed like a very emotional sentimentalist. So the students came together and formed a conspiracy and picked him up and threw him on the ground outside. And Devananda Pandit just watched. If the teacher or the guru does not teach and train the students and disciples properly, then the guru is karmically responsible for their misbehavior. So Lord Srivast Thakur, he just felt really bad. Maybe he caused a disturbance, or maybe because he couldn't hear the Bhagavatam anymore. So he just went home and cried. Because they hurt the heart of Srivast Thakur, they were condemned. So Lord Chaitanya here on the roadside was screaming at Devananda Pandit, "You offended a great devotee, Srivast Thakur. And you have no devotion yourself. Therefore, your speaking of Bhagavatam is simply misleading hypocrisy. You have no right to speak." He really chastised him. Now, this is an interesting contrast. He was so affectionate and kind to these drunkards. He was ready to just run right in the house and give him Krishna prema. Right? Because they were immoral, they were nonsense, but they were basically innocent. Here is foremost scholar of Srimad Bhagavatam, renounced, moral, ethical, practically a sannyasi. And the Lord is just scornfully chastising him, telling him he's condemned. And then after chastising Devananda, the Lord Chaitanya just walked away. And Devananda Pandit really felt quite devastated. But he couldn't understand. He did not have the capacity to understand what the Lord was saying. Years went by in that condition. But after Lord Chaitanya took sannyas and moved to Puri, one of the Lord's associates, Vakreshwar Pandit, happened to be performing Sankirtan in all the various areas of Navadvipa. And Vakreshwar Pandit happened to come to Kulia, where Devananda Pandit's academy was. And Vakreshwar Pandit came to Devananda Pandit's house and asked him if he could stay there. So now Vakreshwar Pandit is giving his association to Devananda Pandit. And Devananda Pandit, seeing the behavior of Vakreshwar Pandit, he had such humility, such devotion, such intense attachment to the Lord's name, intense attachment to the Lord's message. He was immersed in devotional service. And he was so kind-hearted that little by little by little, just by being in the association of Vakreshwar Pandit, Devananda Pandit's heart began to change. And he wanted to serve him. He wanted to do something for him. So when Vakreshwar Pandit would perform kirtan, you know his kirtan. He was one of the lead dancers of the Rath Yatra every year in the seven parties. Lord Chaitanya specifically designated. Before Rath Yatra, Lord Chaitanya would divide the devotees from Bengal and Orissa into seven Sankirtan parties. One party, Swarup Damodar Goswami was the lead singer. And who was the lead dancer? Advaitacharya. The second party, Srivas Thakur was lead singer. And the lead dancer was Nityananda Prabhu. And the third party, Mukunda Dutt was the lead singer. And the lead dancer was the Namacharya, Haridas Thakur. In the fourth party, the three brothers, Vasudev Ghosh, Madhava Ghosh, and Govinda Ghosh were the lead singers. And the lead dancer was Vakreshwar Pandit. And then there was another party of the devotees from Shantipur. And Achyutananda, the eldest intimate son of Advaita Prabhu, was the lead dancer. And from Kulinagram, Satyaraj Khan and Ramananda were the lead dancers. And the seventh group was from Srikanda. Have any of you ever been to Srikanda? What an incredible, magnificent holy place that is. It's not far. It's only a couple hours from Navadvip. Srikanda is the place of so many great devotees. And from there, Narahari Sarakar and his nephew Raghunandan Thakur were the lead dancers. At one time, Lord Chaitanya sang and Vakreshwar Pandit danced, and they continued for 72 hours. And Lord Chaitanya said, if I had another wing like you, Vakreshwar Pandit, I would certainly be able to fly. So this was his absorption in Harinam and Harikatha. So he was dancing and singing, and Devananda Pandit wanted to. His heart was so softened by his association, he wanted to serve him. Now, Devananda Pandit was a very, very grave and very charismatic and powerful person. Crowds of hundreds and hundreds of people would gather around Vakreshwar Pandit to see his dance and hear him chant. And Devananda Pandit, with a stick, would keep people a distance so that they would not interfere with his dancing. And when Vakreshwar Pandit would fall, Devananda Pandit would catch him. When Vakreshwar Pandit was laying down, Devananda Pandit developed so much faith in him that he would take the dust from Vakreshwar Pandit's feet and smear it on every limb of his own body. Because he appreciated a Vaishnav and served a devotee from his heart, his entire life changed. And then he began to think that Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And I was simply an offender to him. He repeatedly chastised me, and I didn't even understand it. But now he's gone and taken sannyas. I missed the opportunity to surrender my life and attain perfection. And then Devananda Pandit began to really meditate on what incredible mercy the chastisement of the Lord was. He was grateful for that. So when the Lord, after taking sannyas, when he was on his way to Vrindavan during his first attempt, he stopped in Kulia. First Vidyanagar and then Kulia. He stayed at a devotee's house named Madhava. And so many offenders were coming to beg forgiveness and get mercy. And one was Devananda Pandit. At this time, he was so humbled. He felt himself so sinful and undeserving. Isn't it amazing? That's the effect of the association of a great devotee. A person who was a great scholar, who was famous throughout the land as a reciter of Bhagavatam, a Brahmin who's austere, celibate, had no possessions. I mean, he was an unbelievable person. By his association and service to a Vaishnav, what happened is he considered himself sinful, fallen, and totally undeserving. Now that is spiritual advancement. So now he was afraid to even approach the Lord. He felt so unworthy. So the Lord called him, and he fell at Lord Chaitanya's feet. The Lord said, "Because you have served Vakreshwar Pandit, come, Devananda, come. Vakreshwar Pandit is a pure devotee of the Lord." Because of his complete attachment to hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord with love, Lord Krishna forever lives within the heart of Vakreshwar Pandit. And therefore, whatever Vakreshwar Pandit is a holy place of pilgrimage. In fact, all the holy places are present wherever Vakreshwar Pandit sings and dances. Because he is so very, very dear to the Lord. Because you have honored and appreciated him, and because you have served him attentively, therefore you may come and ask me benediction. And Devananda Pandit surrendered his life at Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lotus feet. And the only benediction he asked for was, "I recite Bhagavatam my whole life I've been doing, but I don't know what it means. Please tell me, my Lord, how should I speak the Bhagavatam? What should I teach people?" Because already so many people were coming. I'm just thinking of a similarity. George Harrison, Shyam Sundar Prabhu, Yamuna Mataji, Malati Mataji. They helped bring him to Srila Prabhupada. And he was already famous as a musician. So Prabhupada instructed him of, you know, what really the message and the essence of what he should sing for the welfare of the people. Yes? Prabhupada didn't tell him, "Give up your singing." He told him to sing for Krishna. To reveal pure devotional service through his music and Krishna's holy names. And he accepted that. And millions of people's hearts were very much moved by hearing the Maha Mantra and Krishna's message from someone who heard it from a pure devotee, Srila Prabhupada. Incredible phenomena within this age of Kali.
It's still playing as one of the top Maharaja songs. It's been rated one of the top 10 songs of history. Every week it plays constantly everywhere. It's always popular.
That's true. That is completely Srila Prabhupada's mercy flowing through that song. It was absolutely on the inspiration of Srila Prabhupada and the devotees. And he sang that song with a devotion to Prabhupada, knowing that he was acting as an instrument of Prabhupada's compassion. One time I was in a room full of devotees, and I asked, how many of you, your first contact with Prabhupada and Krishna was through George Harrison's music? There was about 20 devotees, and 15 of them raised their hands. Huh? Okay, I'm asking in this group who can raise your hand. Amazing. Even Indian ladies. This is potency.
I was on a bus in Montreal, and somebody had a radio, and My Sweet Lord was playing. Oh my God, this is a beautiful song. I was shocked. Like, I started to feel like the devotional emotion or something. That I never heard that song before. Oh, it's so good.
So even in this room today, a sizable portion, that was their first contact with the Krishna consciousness movement. And because they appreciated the song, which is an act of devotion from a devotee, that's actually when your devotional service begins. Prabhupada explains, when you appreciate a devotee or those activities of Krishna consciousness, that appreciation is the beginning of the path of bhakti. So these wonderful souls who are here with us today, we can understand that they're the ones who went to London. They're the ones who cultivated George Harrison and others. It's by their devotion to Prabhupada, by their being puppets in Prabhupada's hands, that so many people in the world were connected to Krishna. If we do not feel gratitude to those who have directly or indirectly saved our lives, then how will Krishna look upon us? So here, Devananda Pandit, such a great person. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't tell him to stop reciting Bhagavatam. He told him, you recite, but this is how to do it. Every word you must describe in terms of devotional service. The essence of the Bhagavatam from beginning to end is only one subject, pure, unalloyed devotion. You must explain it in this way. He explained, just as the various avatars have descended to this world, Matsya avatar, Kuram avatar, Varaha avatar, Nursinga avatar, similarly, the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna su dharma pagate, dharma jnanadi bisa, kalonashta drishamesha purana godanodita. In this age of Kali, Krishna descends in the incarnation of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It is the avatar of the Lord. It is not different than Krishna. Every word of the Bhagavatam, in essence, is only describing pure love for Krishna. Bhagavatam was not written by any man. It was not composed. Krishna incarnated, manifested through the lips of Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva, even after writing the Itihastas, the Vedas, the Upanishads, the Puranas, the Vedanta Sutra, the Mahabharata, he was not satisfied. But when the Lord manifested through his heart in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam, then he was completely satisfied. Why? Because the Bhagavatam is the work of pure, unalloyed love. Now, you describe Bhagavatam in this way only, and that will be your perfection. So this is the power of appreciating and serving a Vaishnava. Otherwise, even learning, studying, memorizing Bhagavatam thoroughly, you cannot understand. The realization does not take place. So today's verse, in the association of pure devotees, discussions of the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very pleasing and satisfying to the ear and the heart. By cultivating such knowledge, one gradually becomes advanced on the path of liberation, and therefore he is freed, and his attraction becomes fixed. Then real devotion and devotional service begin. So let us take very seriously the proper attitude of appreciation of devotees and keeping the discussion of Krishna, his teaching, his pastimes, and his service as the bridge between us. Avoid prajalpa. So dangerous. Rupa Goswami describes prajalpa as one of the reasons for fall down from the path of bhakti. Gossip, criticism of others, immersion in mundane topics. Bhagavatam describes those people who enjoy this type of gossip, it is considered a pilgrimage of crows. And those who take pleasure in coming together to hear and chant the beautiful pastimes and teachings of the Supreme Personality, it is like a pilgrimage of swans. Even in a filthy place, the swan will not even look in the direction of the dirt and the filth. He'll just look toward the lotus flower. And then even in the lotus flower, he'll only be concerned with the nectar within the stem. That's his concentration. Seek and ye shall find. That goes both ways. Even in a dirty, polluted pool of water, the swan's complete focus will be on the lotus flower and the nectar within it. And even within a beautiful garden of roses and violets and lotuses, gardenias, a fly will be completely unaware of all these things. He's just looking for that one little drop of... Louder, please. What do you think? That's his focus. Seek and you shall find, Jesus said. What you look for, that's what you're going to find in life. Gopal Bhatta Goswami, Anantacharya, describes some of these great devotees. They didn't want to hear the faults of others. In fact, even if it was true, it was just not of any interest to them. They were always looking for what it, for the good in others. If Prabhupada didn't have that quality, where would we all be today? I mean, in San Francisco, California, or the Lower East Side of New York City, if Prabhupada wanted to just be analytical and honest about everybody, could have just walked in the door, you have illicit sex, you take intoxication, you don't bathe every day, you eat meat. I mean, he could have found unlimited faults in all of us. But even if a person was having illicit sex, taking intoxications of all varieties, eating all kinds of different meat varieties, and who was gambling their lives away and who were atheistic and demoniac, even if a person like that, if he just liked the taste of a gulab jamun, Prabhupada would say, ah, so nice, he likes the gulab jamun, very nice. Prabhupada would just, like the swan, just zero in on that quality. Even in a forest of anartas, he would see that little spark of inclination toward associating with a devotee, and he would just put his complete focus on that spark and give his life to fan it and fan it and fan it and fan it and fan it. And people became so indebted and so awakened by his association, by his appreciation. What we heard from these four devotees last night that was very consistent was, even though they were to various degrees in fallen conditions, coming to Prabhupada wearing mini skirts and asking if they could go out and smoke cigarettes while cooking and all these other things, Prabhupada begs to come and live in their house, and they know they don't want him to live there because they're smoking pot. It would be too uncomfortable for them and him. That's how 26-second Avenue was started, because they didn't want him in their house. It was out of respect, but still, they weren't paramhamsas by any means, at least not manifesting. Prabhupada just saw that little speck. And because he saw that speck, he just reciprocated with that little speck and gave them so much love. And that was the consistent topic of yesterday's wonderful, wonderful satsang, is how Prabhupada unconditionally loved them. Unconditionally means they weren't deserving it. He loved them anyway. At the beginning, they didn't even love him. Their love grew for him because of his love for them. That's unconditional love. That is Paramahamsa. That is a swan-like person. And even when Prabhupada would kick Darwin in the face with boot, that was his mercy on Darwin. It wasn't some envy, it was his mercy. Just like Vrindavan Das Thakur says, anyone who criticizes Lord Nityananda, I kick his head with my foot. Hare Krishna. Is this the way Vaishnavas talk? Sometimes. Well, one great Acharya explained that actually what he's doing is, by speaking so heavy about this person, he's actually attracting Krishna's, he's attracting Krishna's mercy to him. If I care so much about this person that I'm thinking like this, Krishna, then please help him. So when Prabhupada chastised, it was out of mercy, it was out of love, it was not out of envy or spite. And one who can appreciate the chastisement of the Lord is most certainly a candidate for liberation. So Prabhupada's love was unconditional. So this fault-finding tendency is one of the greatest impediments to devotional service. But people are so addicted addicted to it due to association with the community of flies since time immemorial. We just have such a taste for
school.
Louder, please.
School.
Very well. In the form of mundane topics, gossip, and fault finding. Prabhupada never fault finded. Even when he would be against Mayavadis or materialists, it was not fault finding. It was compassion. He was trying to uplift. But we like to hear the faults of others, at least some of us. And we like to speak it. It's sense gratification. It occupies the mind. It gives some feeling of happiness to the false ego. But meanwhile, it destroys the devotional creeper. Yatre dyante katam rishtas trishnayo prishamojata nirvairam yatra bhuteshu nodvigo yatra kashchana. That assembly where the wonderful pastimes and activities and teachings of the Lord is taking place is like the spiritual world. As long as that topic is between us, the glorification of the Lord and his devotees, then it eradicates the propensity to be envious of one another. Thank you very much. Is there anyone who would like to speak something on this regard? Bhakti, Haribo.
I was just thinking that, yesterday you were saying like when we're doing service, like chant and be happy. So I was thinking like, you know, maybe it's just my, maybe if you could explain a little bit more, but like if it seems like you'd be miserable if you're like, you know, like lower than the worms in the stool. Like, just is like, I mean, are they like miserable, or how are they actually? How are they making this their mindset that it's humility and not like you're, you know, like in destitution or something?
Very well, Bhakti. We are very proud of you. This is the future of the world, our second generation. She has such spontaneous and sincere enthusiasm for Krishna consciousness. Sitting through this long, boring class, taking notes, she's definitely a very rare soul. Thank you. Yes, if you were to go to a psychiatrist, and he laid you on the couch and said, please, well, what do you think about yourself? And you say, I'm lower than a worm in stool. I'm more sinful than Jagayan Madhai. Psychiatrist said, oh, who's Jagayan Madhai? They were so sinful that Yamaraj couldn't even keep track of their nefarious activities. Is there anything else you'd like to tell me? Yes. Yes. If anyone hears my name, they lose all their piety. If anyone speaks my name, they become sinful. That psychiatrist would probably give you an extra high dose of Thorazine or something. Put you in the Bellevue Mental Hospital. And you have maniac inferiority complex and depression. Yes? Is that your question?
Yeah.
It's true. It's completely true. But Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami is seeing everything in relation to Krishna. It's not an inferiority complex, it's humility. There's a complete difference between the two. Inferiority complex is totally frustrated false ego. You want to be something big, but you've just failed, and you don't see anything good about yourself, and you don't really see any good anywhere, and therefore you become depressed, and even maybe maniac depressed. And you just hate yourself, and if you hate yourself, you hate the world. So that's serious mental disease. But Kaviraj Goswami, he sees the greatness of Krishna. He sees the beauty of Krishna. He sees the greatness and glory of the Acharyas. And therefore, in relationship, humility is a positive thing. It's completely positive. In humbling himself, he's diving deeper and deeper and deeper in the greatness of God and the Vaishnavas. And therefore, he's actually feeling ecstasy. Yes? So no, we cannot, if we imitate Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami and really try to psychoanalyze the worms in stool and think ourselves lower than them, we'll go insane. Huh? From inferiority to depression. But we see that the great devotees, because they're in a mood of actual humility, their happiness is not in their own greatness. Their happiness is in Krishna's greatness, in Guru's greatness, in the Acharya's greatness. That's where all their happiness is. But if you don't have that, if you don't take happiness in your own greatness, you're nothing. You're blank. You're empty. Yes? Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Ayananda Tanuja Kinkaram Patinam Pam Vishameva Vambudo. He's praying, let me just be an atomic dust particle at your lotus feet, Krishna. Yes? That's also very humble. What if you tell the psychiatrist that? I just want to be a dust particle at the lotus feet of Krishna. They would think you're insane. This person wants a young lady, what is her age? 17-year-old American girl, and her ultimate goal of life is to become an atomic dust particle. Doesn't make sense. Who is crazy? But because we understand and appreciate and love the greatness of Krishna, therefore we want to only be an atomic particle. So the great devotees, their humility is in relation to the greatness of Krishna. And in their humility, they completely, total, wholeheartedly take shelter of Krishna. If in thinking yourself lower than a worm in stool, you totally take shelter of Krishna with such humility and chant his holy name, you will experience ultimate bliss. Does that answer your question? How do you roll? Yes, Prabhu. There's a difference between criticizing and correcting. Correcting is a positive thing. Criticism with a positive view of service is constructive. Criticism without a positive motivation and a practical plan to improve things is simply prajapa. And even Srila Prabhupada, I imagine if I have heard stories where some devotees would criticize another devotee who was doing something. And Prabhupada say, well, can you do something better? Yes? That was sometimes there? So it's easy to criticize. In fact, for the false ego, it's pleasurable to criticize. We find shelter in criticizing others. But that is a great disturbance. So to point out faults, to actually make a situation better, and actually have the means to do so, is devotional service. But unless we really have a plan, unless our speech of finding faults with others actually has a practical and real value to help uplift people, then it's prajalpa. So yes, it's the duty of any devotee who has the capacity to bring justice where it is required, to act and to speak. But it's in a mood of service. Otherwise, just to talk, who do we help? I mean, yes, I mean, so many things have happened in the past amongst devotees. Some ghastly things, some very horrible things. But I mean, we could write many books and memorize them. We have enough material to discuss, to give classes for weeks at a time. But is it enlightening anybody? Is it instilling faith and devotion in people? Not at all. It disturbs people's faith. It disturbs people's enthusiasm. And even if a person does an abominable activity, apichet sutarajaro, bhajate mamananyabhak, sadhur eva samantavya, samyak papishito hisha, Krishna may like that person, even though that person may have done some abominable things. But if Krishna likes him, if you're speaking against with any speck of envy in your heart, then Krishna's going to hold it against you, maybe more than what he did. Haribo. Does that make sense? Even if a person does an abominable activity, if that person is dear to Krishna, yes, that person's going to suffer. But Krishna loves him for the service he's done. And trying to correct him for his weak-heartedness. But Krishna might be more angry with you for speaking against him than he is toward that person for what he's done. Yes? Because you're speaking out of envy. That person fell down, perhaps, as a casualty in the front lines of devotional service. So unless we have a positive motive to actually really help people, then to speak these things is simply prajalpa. It can destroy our spiritual lives. So we should very, very, rather than just letting the uncontrollable tongue just da-da-da-da-da-da, and I have facts, I have evidence, it is all true, documented. Krishna doesn't care. You're going to fall down. Because you're bringing down people's faith. You're criticizing devotees who may literally have done wrong, but Krishna and Prabhupada love them. So unless we're really working to either protect people genuinely and or to upgrade people's devotional service, then to speak these things will cause a great disturbance to ourselves, to the community of devotees, and it will pollute the atmosphere of the universe. So we should be very, very careful and very analytical of our own heart and intentions before we speak the faults of others, especially Vaishnavas. Now, in the Western world, there is a type of culture of freedom of the press, that everything should be spoken. But this is not our culture. Didn't Prabhupada, when somebody asked about the culture of America, Prabhupada said, "What culture?" So, yes, I mean, things should be done in a very discreet way that's actually going to be beneficial to people. As Kali Yuga progresses, this justification, that this truth should come out for everyone to hear. Yes. Like, you know, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, you know, had extramarital sex. It's come out later, after he's gone. The press knew about it, but they never said a word. Dwight Eisenhower, I believe, also had some extra girlfriend. The press never spoke a peep about it, even though they knew. Because he was the president. Out of honor for his respectable position, they didn't say anything. He's doing his job. He might not be, you know, a saint, but how is he going to stabilize and bring faith to the nation? People didn't say it. George Washington, he had illegitimate children, as far as my understanding of history. But, Thomas Jefferson too. No, even if a few people knew, nobody talked about it. But Bill Clinton. This is just how Kali Yuga's evolving. You know, in those days, you know, people were a little discreet about people's problems. It wasn't a public matter. You know, help the person. Don't destroy their name in public. Well, Bill Clinton, you know, he did basically the same thing as a sizable portion of the previous presidents of the United States. I don't know if it was the same process, but same principle. I'll never forget, I was in Bombay. And what was the name of that prosecuting attorney that got all the information? Ken Starr. Bhakti, how do you know all these things? Guru Coolies are the most informed. You have to be real careful amongst these people. Guru Coolies can look right into your heart. If they see anything that's not right, they know it's there. So I'm always nervous when I'm amongst you. So I'm in a car in downtown Bombay, right? And some cows and buffaloes walking around. And we stop at a stoplight, and you know, people come to your windows trying to sell things. So they don't even speak English. You know, there's this Times of India, you know, 1 rupee. And then somebody else comes with some flowers. Flower, 2 rupee. And this, somebody else comes back with a big stack of books. And he says, what's his name? Yes. Says, Kenneth Starr report. 20 rupees. It was all the gory, hideous details about, you know, our respectable president's, you know, unconventional private life, immoral private life. Okay, it was abominable. It's abominable. We can't justify it. Previous, even in our own country, it wasn't dealt with this way. Just the truth must be spoken to everyone for all time to come. This is not the truth. Param Satvam Dhimahi. The truth is Krishna. He's the absolute truth. That's the truth that has to be disseminated all over the universe. Prabhupada wanted his books distributed, not the Kenneth Starr Report. How is the Kenneth Starr Report going to end? It's just going to depress people. It's going to depress good people and bad people. It's going to enliven them like anything. Ah, you just see, yeah. But that's just the way Kali Yuga is, especially this Western influence of Kali Yuga. You know, just free press. Everything should just be. All the dirty laundry should be there for to pollute the whole world. But Prabhupada wanted his books distributed, not prajalpa. Prabhupada wanted the truth. The truth is not a person's immoral, unethical tendencies. The truth is that we are all part and parcel of Krishna, who's the source of everything that exists. And that devotion is the only means of approaching him. And how in this age of Kali, the only means of attaining that devotion is chanting his holy names. Krishna is all attractive, and he has descended within his name. This is truth. If we really want to come out with the truth, this is what we should be sharing with each other and preaching to one another. And if, practically and realistically, finding faults in different people's behavior actually helps people, actually, not in our own mind, but actually helps people to surrender to that truth, then it is favorable for devotional service. If not, it will destroy our bhakti and pollute the world. Does that answer your question? I forgot your question. I hope I addressed your question. Huh? Probably more beyond than that. Thank you very much. Is there any other comments or questions? Ah, Haribo.
I hope I'm not too dull in this subject. Recently, when a young devotee approached me, she had observed that one in two is a devotee in the community.
Hmm? Can you speak a little louder, please? I'm not sure if I specifically understand your question, but in Prabhupada's Leela, there's an incident where a leader was doing immoral acts and disturbing the whole atmosphere. And the other leaders didn't do or say anything about it. And Prabhupada chastised them. Why you didn't do something about it. There's another instant where a leader did quite abominable things. And another leader made it public. And Prabhupada chastised him. why have you ruined this person's spiritual life so he'll be too ashamed to ever come back? Hari Hari. So we have to understand the intelligent balance. If we're going to help someone, we become like a surgeon. We're trying to help. Now, if you have a, what are those boils called that go inside, carbuncles? If you have a carbuncle and this boil and all the poison is going inside, I remember I once had one on my finger. And I was just thinking, it'll go away, it'll go away, until it was purple and it was bigger than my whole hand, my finger. And then someone said, why don't you go to the hospital? I said, no, no, it'll go away. So the hospital, they were about to amputate my finger. They said, it never goes away. It has to be taken out. So, you know, they went in and did a surgery in my finger. So they solved the problem. But if you have a carbuncle in your finger, it's not the surgeon's duty to rip up every other part of your body, just the finger. Right? So I'll just start, you know, cutting open the legs and cutting open the stomach and cutting open. That's irresponsible. So we actually have to do what's needful. Prabhupada would say, do the needful. So publicly disgracing a person who's given his life because they've done some horrible thing, Prabhupada condemned that. And letting them just go on doing what they're doing, he condemned that. So there's a balance. The tendency of people in Kali Yuga is to be extremists. It's actually, it takes a lot of sensitivity and intelligence to be balanced. It's easy to either be an atheist or a fundamentalist, right? It's easy to either be a fanatic or a one way or the other. And even within our movement, you know, there has been extremes. And one, and to try to deal with one extreme, we go to another extreme. And then to deal with that extreme, we go to another extreme. And there's so many instances. It's human nature in Kali Yuga. Because it doesn't take much sensitivity and surrender of our intelligence to go to extremes. To be fanatical. I remember a letter Prabhupada wrote to Bahulaswa in regard to college preaching. Because I was doing college preaching, so I wanted to understand, what does Prabhupada say? How to do it? He said, don't try to push the philosophy on them. Just make friends with them and present it. Present it in such a nice way that by their own intelligence, they will come to the conclusion that Krishna consciousness is the right thing. Not just telling them, it's the right thing. Just present it to them in such a way that they come to that conclusion with their own intelligence. That's a more powerful way of preaching. But our tendency is to be fanatical. It takes a lot of sensitivity and patience to be balanced. But that's what a Vaishnava is to do. What Prabhupada explained, we have to resolve the threat and the danger to innocent devotees, but we have to do it in a way that has dignity and respect, and also gives that person a chance to improve in the future. Does that address your question? So we should not ignore when people are deviating and hurting others. It has to be resolved. It has to be dealt with. But it should be dealt with in a Vaishnava way, not in a revolutionary, you know, American patriotic way, not a free press way. It should be done, if necessary, with confidentiality, and to allow a person going on doing horrible things and keep it secret, that's cover-up. But to deal with the situation in a way that you're actually resolving the problem, but keeping the confidentiality to protect that person's integrity, at least for the future,
That's not a cover-up. That's just the Vaishnava way of doing things. That's the way Prabhupada did things. Does that make sense? So it's cruel to cover up things, but it's another type of cruelty to just unnecessarily publicize things. So yes, we have to protect our devotees from contaminating influences. Sometimes people have to be removed from a place or removed, but it should be done with as much dignity as possible. That should be our meditation. Would anyone else like to speak on this subject? Yes, Parikshit Prabhu.
I have a story, but that involved yourself to tell to everyone.
I don't know if I can.
I hope I will not offend you, but it's a great story. And since 18 years, I keep this story in my heart because I never revealed that to you. But in 1986, I was president in Montreal, and one day, one Prabhu, Ani Bhavoy, called me. And he was running a small center in Laval, north of Montreal, for New Vrindavan organization at that time. And he said to me, Parikshit, I have a great news, and I need an answer from you. I said, my Guru Maharaj, who was Bhaktivedanta at that time, Kirtanananda, is coming in town, and he wants to visit the temple. And for some reason at that time, there was like little rules. And I said, yes. Oh, I said, that's great news, but when? And I was like, you know, like he said that. But the only point is because he's coming with his guard dog. I said, oh. I said, can I call you back in this matter in half an hour? Ani Baba said, yes. And I just said, oh, wow. I was sit there and said, what's happened now? You know, I had to take a quick decision because he was waiting for answer and had a good relation anyway with mostly everyone. And I just called to influence God brother of you in Montreal, ex-president. I said, what I should do with that? You know, and so, he said, you have the temple in charge, Parikshit. You have to take your decision. Call your GBC. I said, I don't want to go so far. You know, it's a local thing now. You know, it's here. It will happen soon. And they never gave me a direction. And I just said to anybody, I called him back. I said, who I am to decide who can come or not. I am in charge to give access to everyone who can come and get darshan of Radha Manwar and get some prasad. I said, I think this is my duty. He said, okay, I will be there anyway in 2 hours. We will prepare something. And the word came like fast in the community. And this was like tomorrow night it will happen. And the next tomorrow night, and there is where you've been involved.
Great to hear the rest.
What's happened? It's about the temple and the Wednesday night being crowded. This temple floor, for those who've never been there, it's 50 feet by 40 feet, and the ceiling is at 50 feet high. It's like a block. It's an old church, eh? And it's very huge, lots of floor space and everything. And anybody came, he prepared like a little chair and flower for his guru. And anyway, I was looking around, and I had one apartment just beside the temple, a ground floor apartment, full equipped for sannyas and guests. And I said, you can go there if you want to prepare something. And I gave him the full access, of course. And for me, it was like, wow, those devotees were here before me. If I'm here today, it's because of them. If they never been there, you know, like yesterday, those four majestic Prabhu were saying things about Prabhupada.
if they never been there, we will not be sit here, like you said. Anyway, I came to this reflection, and I will conclude quickly. And anyway, that evening, we had about 75 devotees were there. All some Prabhu, I did saw them since so many years, or they show up like that. And there are the maybe a good group of 20 Prabhupada disciples. And I had disciple of Bhagavan Maharaj who were living in Montreal at that time, and it was tough for them too. And Bhagavad disciple, and anyway, it was like a mixture of, and you remember those times. But the cherry of this story is that night, I didn't know Radhanathaswami was one of the guests, or he did tell me that. But and I was knowing you from New Vrindavan by visiting New Vrindavan many times, and I know you. But anyway, that night, like everyone tried, and it was funny because everyone was not late. Everyone was there before. And anyway, Ani Bhavo arrived with his guests and everything. He went to the little apartment, and from the little apartment, everyone was looking, you know, for what's happened with the dogs. You know, big, huge guard dogs. You know, some German Shepherd, and very well educated, anyway. And Kirtan Ananda, if I can call him, he came in with the dog with two servant or three, and he went directly to altar and pay obeisance and look at the deity and everything, and just went around, and Ani Bhavo told him about the little Vyasasana he had at the back corner. And this is a huge floor, bigger than here. And suddenly you appear with another group of devotees following. You went to DT, and we were able to feel the tension. First of all, who will do the kirtan, or who will speak, or who what, and nothing was really on the board. It was like we will just follow the music. And there is yourself arriving, pay obeisance, and as soon I was just watching you, right? Because you were my savior that night. And he just paid obeisance, and it was very intense. And everyone was looking at him. He took someone gave him a kirtan, and he started to kirtan. Do you remember that kirtan?
I don't remember it at all.
It was it was for a 2-hour kirtan, and we have picture of that. It was like going like, you know, like when the wind go fast. Yeah. Hey, all those devotees, they were not doing any gossip, any prajalpa, and everyone was looking for that when they arrived first. We will, eh? Mm-hmm. No. You humbly, you being so humble, and I declare that with my heart, you took everyone at the right place. Everyone was dancing, Nandi Kajwira, I can name everyone. And to finish, what was the beautiful thing of that? When you walk out, everyone wait before you walk out, to walk out. And they went on their car and their business. The next Sunday feast was the revelation. Because everyone came to me. Not all of them, because some they never show up after. Those who came back at the Sunday feast, they just came to me and said, it was such a great kirtan and great evening, Bertrand. That's the conclusion. You teach me something.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that in the 14 worlds there's no other shelter than the holy name. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thank you very much.